Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we help you get your paychecks up and your debt balances down. And so we don't get sued, this is for entertainment purposes only. And yo, Happy New Year, fam.
Happy 2018 to you, Rich, and the listeners. Welcome back to the other side.
Yes.
And for the new listeners, let's get those personal finances right. And to help you do that, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You can find our individual accounts for the Dulcet Brothers, the Marcus Garrett with one T and two T's everywhere else on Earth. I just ran out of characters on Twitter. And you can find Rich all around the web at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And you can also now find the podcast on Spotify. Yes. For that one and hopefully more listener that asked, we are now there for you. So please tell your network, because we hope not to see, or we do want to see, more than one download on Spotify since we put the work to get in there. And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
Yo, man, when you said Dulcet, I thought you were going to call us the Dulce de Leche Brothers. And I was like, really? You want to call us like a coffee and cream team? But you didn't go there. So
yeah. I did not. And I don't even know how you connected those dots.
Yeah. All I heard was D-U-L. That's all it took. I was like, where is he going with this? So today's episode is sponsored by LinkedIn Learning. You get a free 30-day trial of their extensive online course library by visiting linkedin.com/paychecks. Perfect time of the year for this. And again, linkedin.com/paychecks, all lowercase, and you'll hear a little bit more about them later in the show. So how's the new year been so far, good brother?
It's been good. And for the people out there, I know it's a new year, but that also means you're probably updating the resume and looking around if we're going to keep it real. So even if you're passively or actively looking, don't forget to take advantage of that LinkedIn opportunity. They have some great courses out there. 2018 star. I've been trying to find any term that I can. Maybe the listeners can help me out. But right now, I've still only got vision board. I just don't like using vision board because it reminds me of like some The Secret video that now everybody makes fun of, and I'm not trying to get memed. But I did update the vision board for 2018, and it's looking good. One thing I realized, and I shared this with someone else, is I really like it, and this is why I recommend it this year. I did it a little bit differently. I broke it down by quarter to align with both the show and kind of what I want to accomplish. So every 3 months, I have like a list of goals that I want to accomplish within that 3 months.
Look at and you.
It's looking manageable. And I say that because there's been years where it's like I look at the board and I'm like, this is impossible. I'm setting myself up to fail. And I'm like, yo, I'm seeing the payoffs from those hectic years when everything was all over the place, where now this year is looking real manageable, real doable. So I suggest that y'all sit down, whichever tool we use, Trello. I got a vision board, whiteboard, costs like $10, whatever tool you use. But put a system, as we're going to talk about in the show, in place for success in 2018.
Yeah, I was just talking with a few folks in this mastermind group that I'm in, and there was, I think it's either a book or there's something called the 12-week year. I'm trying to Google this as I'm talking about it, which the idea is essentially to plan things out by quarter to make it more manageable and to make sure you can put the systems and processes in place on a quarterly basis that'll ultimately feed into the rest of the year. And I was already looking to that. So what you said there about breaking things down by quarter, I like that. I like that. I might need to do that for my personal life too.
And yeah, the only thing I would say is, in whatever form, whether it's electronically or, you know, literally pen and paper, I'd say write it down, because I think everyone, you know, everyone has this idea in their head, but that might as well be the equivalent of a fantasy if that's the only place where it stays. So I do think it's important to have it written down or somewhere visual where you can see it and hold yourself accountable, or find an accountability partner in your life, which may be your spouse, but that might lead to fights. So you might want to find some neutral or unbiased party, or you can write into the show and we will be happy to harass you in the DMs, if that is whatever it takes to get you moving in the right direction this 2018.
Baby, I said I was going to get it done. Yeah, I can see that going south.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm just trying to help, or I'm just trying to help you. And then it goes south.
And then they're going to get us in trouble. Well, Rich and Marcus said, who is Rich and Marcus? You know, I'm not trying to get beat up in the streets over some personal finance advice. I just want to see y'all win.
Yeah, we don't want those emails. So who are we talking to on today's episode, man?
We have Jen Hemphill of the Her Money Matters podcast. Some great topics here for her to help you get your money right, along with the Dulcet Brothers.
And so one theme over these next few months is going to be laying the foundation. So there's a work element to that. There's a personal finance element to that. And if you have questions, things you want to send us, again, that is info@paychecksandbalances.com. But yeah, this is today's chat with Jen. Hope you enjoy, and we'll see you on the back end of the show, or you'll hear us, whatever.
Jen Hemphill is a military spouse and bilingual Latina who helps women who are tired of the traditional money advice break out of their inner financial confidence so they can claim their own unique version of financial freedom. Yes. She's also an accredited financial counselor and host of the Her Money Matters podcast. As a money coach, Jen believes that money should enrich, not stress out your life. That your money mindset is the foundation to your success with money. That money skills like budgeting, saving, etc. are the bricks that go on top of that foundation to build a strong financial home. When she's not talking about money, she also enjoys a good dance-off, which I might look into, photography, coffee, chocolate, traveling, working out, and spending time with her husband and two boys. Welcome to Paychecks and Balances. Hey. Anything else the audience needs to know about you?
You covered it all. You did amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. No problem. The powers of Google have assisted us again.
So I want to know more about this dance off thing. What's that all about?
Well, since I was a little girl, I was born in Colombia. Dance was my thing. I honestly, when I was a little girl, that's what I wanted to be, was a professional dancer. Hmm. When I was maybe 4 or 5, and when we were in Colombia, my parents had a discotheque. Okay, I'm aging myself. This was in the 70s. And so it was a discotheque / place to eat and home as well. Like in the sense, like our home was like upstairs or something like that. And I would sneak down at night to dance with everybody with a little disco ball, right? So I've always loved dancing. When I went to college, I was always the first one on the dance floor. I was always the last one off. That is my thing, is just I absolutely love dancing. I'm not afraid. Like when I say a dance off, I'm not going to do break dancing because I will injure myself and others in the process. But I am not afraid to get out on the dance floor.
So how did you sleep if there was... It sounds like there was a party going on downstairs. Like, how did that work?
Yes.
Like going to sleep
on the weekends.
Disco tunes.
Yes, it was on the weekends, and I wasn't supposed to be down there, but I would sneak down anyways.
So, how did you eventually, or was it a part of it, transition into the money space?
The dancing into the money space?
Yeah, I guess.
No, basically, when I got married, I married a man that's in the military. So I was always looking for something to do because in the military, we move around a lot. We, in our 17 years of marriage, we have moved, I think it's either 8 or 9 times, one of those two. I've lost track. And so I wanted, because having a career was important to me, I wanted to find something that I could take with me and it's mobile that I can do from home. And I always was good, quote unquote, good with my finances. People were asking me what I was doing right. When we got married and had our first child, we went from making 2 incomes to 1 because it was important to us, especially me, to stay at home with my son. And so it was just transitioning into that 1-income household, minimizing our expenses and making, just pressing on. So I eventually, because in the military, they do a lot, it's a family affair in the sense that they try to support the spouses. They know the sacrifices that we make. There was an opportunity to apply for what's called the Military Spouse Fellowship Program, where it basically, it's just a scholarship where you go and get your accredited financial counselor designation. So I applied for that, got in, and that was like the aha moment. I said, this is what I could do, move around, continue and not start over a career or maybe not have a job for a while and build from there. So that's basically how it started with that program.
So how did you develop those good financial habits? Like, were you just always good with money, someone who was super organized, or is that how you were brought up?
Well, I was always super organized, but I have also made a lot of mistakes as well. So learning from my mistakes and really having some times of reflection, because I grew up in a household. My parents were very, very hardworking, but I also heard a lot of, we can't afford this, or we don't have the money. That was a phrase that I heard over and over again. So I was that kid, like even in my teenage years, or even when I was 8, 9 years old, I wasn't asking my parents for money because they had already told me like tons of times they didn't have it. And so I became as independent as I could be for that age. So if there was an opportunity to make money, I would do it, because I was about 10 years old. They don't do this nowadays, where I was babysitting. So that was a way for me to make money. So I knew early on that money, it was like a very important part in terms of, I didn't want to have a lack of, because that's, I saw my parents struggling. That was a part of discussions or arguments that happened with them. So I knew that when I grew up that I wanted to make enough money that I didn't want to have debt to make sure that I wasn't in that same position.
And I think this is a great opportunity. We got a question from a listener, actually the end of 2017. So I'll ask that question here, and then it might lend it to a couple others. My husband and I are in Gaines, which is highly volatile. It's true that we make more after our moves, but A, we keep having to dip into savings to move jobs, and we're worried about plateauing. Rent is starting to outpace our income. We've had to move twice because of rent. So how do you, or what do you recommend for overcoming impact to the budget or savings when you have to do all these moves?
Right. That is a great question. For each move, you have to readjust the budget, right? So, and it's also, you have to look at how you're managing your money, because there was a long time in our marriage where we were also dipping into an emergency funds. And I was, quote unquote, doing all the right things. I was reading those personal finance books. I was following the money experts' advice to the T. But for some reason, we were still dipping into those emergency funds. We would work hard to build it up, and then we would dip into it. So one of the things that when moving a lot is, one, you have to definitely look at the budget and readjust for that. But if you're dipping into emergency funds, then that means you have to do a little more planning, and it's not going to be a perfect plan, right? Because you can plan as much as you want and estimate and do the best estimation, but it might be off, and that's completely okay. But you just have to do maybe some better planning, because with moves, I know personally for our moves, even though with the military, they cover the moves in terms of they bring the movers, and that's paid for. But there's some other things that are not accounted for that are out of our pocket. So for example, that in between the transition, you may have to be in lodging or somewhere. So the military only pays a certain amount. They pay, I don't remember how many days. So then you have to consider eating out, right? When they pack you out, they don't pack everything in terms of, there's some things like cleaning supplies that are not going to be, that they don't pack because it's, you know, toxic, right? It's they don't want to pack that. So that means you either have to gift those cleaning supplies to someone. And even though these are little things, they add up, right? So the cleaning supplies, so you gift them or you put them in your car and if you're moving stateside and you drive with that, or you move to a different place and let's say it needs curtains, right? So those little things that you don't think about, those, all those things add up. And the other thing too, as well, if you're aside from the move, if you're dipping into your emergency fund, you want to see, because this is a mistake that I made and that I see a lot of people make, is like, let's say they create a budget and there's the different categories. There's the housing or the rent, there's the groceries, let's say gifts, those type of things. So they put different numbers. Well, some of those categories, if you will, are non-monthly expenses like gifting, unless maybe you're a mom of a four-year-old and there's like birthday parties almost every weekend. True story. That's how it felt like. But so you have to, let's say you in the gifts, I'll just use that as an example. Let's say you put a certain amount, you're estimating a certain monthly amount. But what happens there is that the budget is a tool. It's not going to take the action for you. So if let's say you're putting, I don't know, $50, allotting $50 a month for gifting for the whole year, or $50 a month, but you don't do anything with it, meaning that money needs to be moved somewhere, right? So that's another source of why we were dipping into our emergency funds. We weren't planning well. It might be in our budget, but it stayed there. And of course, the budget doesn't speak to the bank account, right? So you have to take that action to move that money that you're mapping out in those different non-monthly categories to a different account.
So it sounds like gifts became an emergency.
Kind of, right? And it shouldn't be.
And so along those lines, do you, for that emergency fund, do you have a recommendation? Is it percentage? Do you do 3 to 6 months? And then is there any tools that you found for helping with that automation?
Okay. So in terms of how much, I say start where you're at. So I do like how Dave Ramsey says starts with 1,000. If that's what is feasible for you at this period of time, go for that and then build from there. So start where you're at. Don't jump. Maybe 3 to 6 months seems overwhelming for you. And that's completely okay. So start with where you're at. Figure out where is your starting point. So is it $1,000? Is it a month full of spending? What is that number that you're comfortable with? And you also want to consider your job stability or your income stability too when you factor that in. Because if it's maybe not a, if you know that it's not a stable job, you want to get to that goal quicker, right? So then when you decide what that number is, so let's say you decided that $1,000 is your starting point, how long is it going to take you to get there? So that means you're going to have to do some crunching of the numbers. And then from there, if you decide you're going to do $100 a month, if that's what fits within your cash flow every month, then that's when you do an automatic transfer. So you just go online, log into your bank, and just do that automatic transfer and just treat it like a bill. That's really what I really emphasize a lot, because we think, oh, we'll put it in when we can or if we're able to, but just go ahead and just pretend it's a bill. Treat it like a bill. Treat it that important.
Yeah, that's definitely a great tip, to treat it like another bill. And I'm going to go ahead and plug ourselves. We have read and did a review of The Total Money Makeover, which has those 7 baby steps. The one that was mentioned here today was to save $1,000. And no, I'm not going to go through all 7, because you'll have to visit paychecksandbalances.com/books. So along those lines, as a money coach, do you see any common obstacles that you're either seeing or hearing from folks reaching their goals? Is this one of them, or what is the major one?
The major one is really overwhelm is what I see. Not knowing where to start, or getting stuck at the budgeting part itself. And really that all comes from fear. Fear of looking at how much maybe you're overspending. And maybe it's not as much as you think it is. Just fear of those numbers is one of the biggest things. So just getting started is what it is. But it's important to know that you have to know what that number is to move forward. And they're just numbers. There's nothing to be afraid of. And it's better to know to be able to move forward. So that's what it comes down to, is just not knowing where to start. Or if they've started, it's getting stuck on the budgeting in terms of it's not working. And it basically comes down to what I mentioned earlier with like the non-monthly expenses, not making sure that those numbers, that they're setting that money aside for the gifts or for the travel or for those type of things.
And along those lines, I don't want to say I've given up, especially starting in 2018. We're only 7 days in here, at least the date of this recording. But I guess I'm trying to be nice here. So I used to recommend a 50-30-20 budget. It seemed generally ignored. So I just told people 80-20, like just save 20, and what you do with the 80%, we could talk about later. Do you even bother to have those type of percentage allocation, or how do you have people overcome themselves? That seems to be an obstacle as well.
People like
right.
Me.
So basically I have them look at those different budgeting, quote unquote, rules. And I always say, these are just guidelines to help you at least get started, right? So it's just a matter of them taking a look at that. But it's also important, I think it's really important when it comes to budgeting, is you have to know what phase and stage of life you're in. And what I mean by that is that I think there's a lot of people don't like budgeting because it's restrictive, or there's a lot of negative connotation towards budgeting, and it feels like it's a lot of work, but it really depends on what stage you're in. So if let's say, and there's four stages, and let's say you don't have any clarity in terms of your money. You don't know the money that's going out. You know the money that's going in because people know what they're getting paid, right? But when it comes to spending, like how much did you spend on groceries last month? They have to go look, right? They don't have it memorized. So if you don't have clarity, you're going to need more intensity in the budgeting. That means it's going to take a little more work. And as you go and put systems in place, because the budget is just a tool, you still have to have a money management system. And what I mean by money management system is you need to decide, how is that money going to flow? So I know Dave Ramsey is big on the cash envelope system, which is good for some things, and in my opinion, and other things, it's a pain in the butt. Let's just be real. And then you can also do a virtual envelope system. And the virtual envelope system consists of different bank accounts or savings accounts. And with that, or you can also have a combination of the both. So let's say you have noticed, you have observed that eating out is where you spend a lot of money. And you know that if you have cash in hand, let's say you designate a cash envelope system for the eating out, you're going to be less prone to overspending in that area. So that would be one way to use the cash envelope system. And what I really like about the virtual envelope systems, because we're used to, just by nature, what we know is open a checking account and open a savings account. But we can open up multiple accounts and treat them like envelopes, like those cash envelopes that Dave talks about, or use them with the different categories as appropriate. So for example, we have a gifting account, right? It's a savings account where every single month we designate a certain amount that comes out and it automatically is transferred to that gifting account. So when it comes Christmas, or my boys have birthday parties, but not as often, they're older now, but we just go directly to that gifting account and that's where the money comes out. Mm-hmm. And it's easier. The advantage of that is that it allows, you don't have to track as much because you just open up your bank app and look at that, let's say that gift account, and see how much money's in there. Or we also have a grocery or a daily go-to account where it's like basically for groceries or daily stuff that we put money into. And before I go to the grocery account, I check in. Okay, we have this amount left. And I'll look at the time of the month. All right, we have a couple more weeks to go, right? So it makes it easier versus doing the math. I'm a little lazy in that sense, where I say, let's say we allotted $500 for groceries and I have to go through the receipts. How much money do we, you know, are we on budget, or how much money do we have left? I would have to go through the receipts. And then, because usually it's in that one main account, and instead you have it separate and it's more visual. It's a lot easier to manage.
Now, do you have like a money minute that you do every day where you set aside time to go through all money things, or do you have like a money day of the week? So for myself, I've for a while, and it worked really well, and then I fell off like with most of it, other things. Mm-hmm. I would have a day of the week where I was like, all right, I'm going to spend an hour going through all things money related. So do you have something like that for yourself where you get up in the morning and you go through money, or at the end of the day, you look through bills and expenses and receipts? By the way, I have like bags of receipts from like,
oh, the receipts are my demise. I detest them. But so what I do, I take two times of the month where I do like overall, just more of an in-depth check, make sure that, and that's when I just sit down and I for the most part, I automate all the bills to be paid, but there's some bills that I like to just pay manually, like the cell phone bill, just in case they overcharge something that they shouldn't. I'd rather me pay manually versus them get their money first and me try to fix the problem, right? So there are some bills that I automate and others I don't. So twice a month is when I sit down and just look, do more of an in-depth look. And throughout the week, like I go grocery shopping every week, I just do a quick look at my bank app. And I just do a quick search because since I have those different accounts, and it's usually the ones that are most used are the billing account, because the billing account is our main hub and our income goes in there. And from there are where all the bills are paid out of. And then from there, I also look at the grocery account or the go-to account, because that's really the two that are most used. So maybe once a week is when I do it, just a quick look. And then twice a month is when I sit down and really do more of an in-depth look.
Got it.
And I appreciate you saying that. For the cell phone bill, I found a couple mistakes also, and I actually haven't figured this one out. It might just be I'm cheap, but my insurance bill, they didn't tell me, but like one day it was just $5 more. It's $5 more a month now. I don't know. It's probably some convenience fee or something like that. And I just have this whole conspiracy that they just nickel dime you to death. So I would recommend to people that, you know, the cell phone, the insurance, those are probably bills that you want to at least take that time not to automate or at least review. And I'd also say maybe once a year, take a look at your salary. On a much earlier episode, it actually might have been our previous podcast, I found like a $20 mistake in my salary because they were still deducting something that I had canceled. And you don't notice little things like that unless you go and look. I just happened to be looking at my, I don't even know what it's called. At that time, I think I was looking at benefits and I was like, wait a minute, what this $20 thing is still. And they credit it back and usually you get the money back and fix. But, you know, that's just money. Any of us, we can just be giving away money.
right. Because they'll be, and I know, let's say like in the military, when there's transition, with UPCS or you do a move, and when there's that money, if they overpay you and you don't, you notice that 9 times out of 10, you notice that and you don't set it aside, all of a sudden, bam, they will take it away as quickly. And so you have to be on top of, definitely, I agree. You have to be on top of what the money that you have coming into you.
Are you thinking about bossing up professionally or financially in 2018? How about picking up some new skills to get you going? LinkedIn Learning can help, especially since they're featuring content from lynda.com, a leader in online learning for the past 20 years. Instead of leaving you to figure out what courses you should take, LinkedIn Learning will recommend them for you automatically. And with the ability to listen, read, or watch from anywhere, it's super simple to get started. In fact, it just recommended a course on managing your personal investments that I'm going to jump into, since actively investing is one of my 2018 goals. For a free 30-day trial of LinkedIn Learning, visit linkedin.com/paychecks. Again, that's linkedin.com/paychecks, all lowercase. Now back to the show.
And I'll say this, I mean, I'd say this for Rich as well, because he's a baller and he won't admit it.
Hey.
So I automate my bills also. Pretty much 80% of them are paid by the second. And then like I go in and look at the cell phone, because some of them also don't come until later in the month. So I'll go and pay some of those later. But what I have is, I really wouldn't even call it a budget. It's just the dollar amount I paid last month. I just have a list of what all the bills were last month. And that's why I noticed the insurance bill went up. So it was supposed to be this amount. I'm like, hey, this is $5 more. I felt like it hasn't risen to the level of me calling customer service. I'm personally mad about it, is why I keep talking about it. But I feel like that's what it is. They probably did some study and they're like, we could probably raise it $5 and people won't call. $6, they'll get on the phone. So I just feel like, you know, I just probably just a marketing sacrifice. They're like, this is the amount that we could raise it where people won't call us.
That's funny.
You know, so I found this tool. It's called Truebill. And it's one of the many automation services I use. And it hooks into your bank account and it'll actually keep track of subscriptions and if things change on a monthly basis. So, like, you know, being that I'm not as diligent about, you know, making the list or using the sticky notes as Marcus does or the whiteboard, I'll get notifications every now and then, and it's like your credit card, well, not probably not credit card bill, but your cable bill has gone up $10. This other subscription has gone up $5. So I've been using
nice.
Yeah, I've been using it pretty regularly, so I feel like I can confidently recommend people, and they won't go to this and get screwed. So I would encourage people to check out Truebill if they think that they're going to be extremely struggling with just trying to manually track everything themselves.
Yeah, same thing. Mint is probably not as on top of that particular issue, but what it does is if something randomly shows up, it'll be like, hey, so for example, I have a 401k and monthly, I think they charge like a maintenance fee, like $8. Mm-hmm. So Mint will notify me. It's always right. So usually it just makes me mad. I'm like, $8, you know, and then I just, you know, get upset for it. I'm mad about $5. I'm like, that's $13 this month. And so I just go off. It's right. But, you know, it's at least it stays on top of it. So I think Mint is a good service, and I've recommended that before. One of your talking points is that expert advice can harm your money. What does that mean?
Basically, we have all these different experts. We've referenced Dave Ramsey. We've got Sue Zimmerman. We've got all these different money experts, which have great advice. They know what they're talking about. I am not going to, you know, say they're not. What I mean by they're harming your money is that I fell into the scenario where I followed their advice to the T, that I became very robotic in what I did. And what you have to understand is that these money experts, or any experts in that case, their expert advice is for the masses, right? Their messaging is for the masses. They don't know your unique situation. So just because this expert tells you this is how it needs to be done, you have to look at your unique situation, because you're an expert in yourself. They're not an expert in you. You are. So you have to look at your unique situation and see what makes best sense for you based on that advice. So that's what I mean.
That felt really empowering, by the way. You're like, you're the expert. I'm like, yes, I am.
You are.
I do
you
know.
Are. They don't know anything about you. You know, is they just talk to the masses. And like I mentioned, their advice is great, but you know, a lot of the experts will say 3 to 6 months. You have to have 3 to 6 months of living expenses for your emergency fund, but maybe for this person in Massachusetts and a family of seven, and maybe they just, their job got cut or whatever, it might not be the ideal situation for them, right?
Right.
So you have to look at your own situation.
And I think, I mean, John, I guess to humanize this is the word I'm going to put out there. I think people can see how animated I get over $8 taken away from me. But like, I'll go out and buy a cup of coffee for $13 or a salad for $15 and think nothing of it.
$13 coffee?
Yes.
Is that on the West Coast?
Actually, it wasn't coffee. There was this salad place out there. And I'm dead serious. Like this $15 salad, I mean, that I could probably put together with $2 worth of ingredients. But it was conveniently located across from the job. And now we have one that's in the cafeteria across, and they're a little bit better. I think it's like nine. It's still a $9 salad because it's mm-hmm. based on weight. And I have never figured this out. The salads weigh less and have the exact same bar. They start at $9. The baked potatoes start at $4. So I won't get into the probably fraudulent schemes that people have gotten into.
The conspiracy again. I sense definitely. I sense that a lot about you. That's hilarious.
Marcus, but did they chop the salad for you though?
No.
See, that's not worth $15. Maybe if they chopped it.
Well, let me correct myself. At the previous place, yes, they chop it. At this place, I'm doing all the work. All they get to do is put the salad on the scale. They charge me $9 for the benefit, allowing me to put a salad together. So anyway, yeah, I say all that to say that, you know, even as we're talking about it, we're not perfect. But I do think it's important to put those things together, those systems in place. And what I've noticed and said as well, a lot of these, and as you spoke to, people are like, oh, it's so difficult. It's so time consuming. You would be further than like 60% of people if you just did it once. So, you know, right. Whether it's a New Year's resolution or whether it's a new podcast resolution, I don't really care. Whatever it may be, if you set it up one time, that's usually better than most people have been doing for the past few years. If you do Mint, actually, I'm bad about this because I have this other list. You can set up your budget once and then it'll track it for you. it'll tell you how bad you are or not. Most people turn off the Mint notifications or they ignore the emails. But that being said, you can set it up and it'll tell you, hey, this is your budget for the month, your food budget, whatever categories you'd like. And here it'll literally track how far you are, what percentage you've used. And then it turns red. And that's when people just, you know, shut down the app. That being said, hopefully you use it to make positive changes is the next step.
Right. Absolutely.
You also talk about, I'll wrap up with this. I think this has been positive, but you talk about the easy and fun things that people can do for their money, but hardly anyone does. So what is the fun part of this money thing that people aren't doing?
I say you need to celebrate your money wins. I am huge on that. It doesn't matter if you found a dollar bill on the floor or this month you actually put money in savings. It doesn't matter what it is, we have to acknowledge, because what we tend to do as humans is that we do accomplish something and we move on to the next thing, but we don't take the time to acknowledge what we accomplished. But then when something goes wrong, we focus on what goes wrong versus the things that we did do right. So it's really, really important to celebrate those money wins. Doesn't matter how big, how small, just celebrate it. Write them down and just acknowledge them. Take a moment to acknowledge them. Yes, I did this.
I like that. Is there any financial advice unique to military families that you'd like to share?
It's just basically with the different moves, it's very, very important to reassess the budget more often than other people have to do. And another thing is as you progress in the career and you get your income increase or your increases, my goodness, I can't talk right now, is to make sure you don't upgrade your living style, which I think not just the military, that we tend to do. We get a promotion and all of a sudden we are starting to spend more money. So I think that's important to make sure that you continue to live how you've been living and saving the extra money that you're getting.
And so I'm glad you said that, because this is the perfect time of year for that reminder. A lot of people are getting their 2018 salaries glossing up, shining, styling on them. So keep that in mind. If you did find yourself getting an increase or a sizable bonus, that doesn't mean you have to blow it.
Exactly.
Yeah, we talk about that lifestyle inflation. And so we also practice the lifestyle deflation, because most people just inflate to the amount of money they make. And then they wonder why they live paycheck to paycheck, despite all the pay raises increase. Not to mention the the taxes have been fixed. So I won't even go into that rabbit hole right now.
Yeah, please
don't. On your podcast, Her Money Matters, do you have a most memorable or impactful episode?
Oh, my goodness. I think the most recent one, because it ties into the new year. I recently did one on 7 ways to boost your financial confidence that I know my audience was excited about. And why I did this episode is that this is the time of the year that we focus on the resolutions, we focus on these money goals or other goals, and that's all great, but we have to take our temperature of what our financial confidence looks like. Because if we don't have the confidence to, let's say, move forward with our financial goals, we have to do something to increase that financial confidence so we can move even faster. So I definitely did that episode, which I think will help a lot of people, just because that's something we don't consider, is really taking a look at our financial confidence.
So without spilling all the tea from that episode, what would be the one of the 7 that comes to mind that you'd want to mention here? Something people can do to get going with that.
Oh, absolutely. One of the ones is to be resourceful. I know Tony Robbins says that resourcefulness is the ultimate resource. And I know that we can be resourceful. It doesn't matter. I know we have all found ourselves at a point of time where maybe we overbooked ourselves. And let's say we had to be at 3 places at once, but that wasn't happening. But somehow we solved that problem, right? Somehow we made it happen and we problem solved. So it's a matter of being resourceful and knowing what to do. That definitely improves your financial confidence. Because if you're resourceful, you figure out a solution, which in turn leads to an action, which will progress you forward, which in turn increases your financial confidence.
Yeah, and along those lines, I was actually just had a recent conversation, so people might be thinking, well, how do I do it for me? Listening to this podcast, this episode going through your ears right now is one of those opportunities. I had somebody tell me, they, as Rich mentioned, they got a raise this year. And they said, Marcus, you know, vacations were dancing through my eyes. And I thought about y'all on the podcast. And I said, no, I closed. I said, no, I'm going to save this. But I was like, you know, a little pat on the back, a little round of applause. So just those little positive changes can be the difference that sets you up for this win in 2018.
Absolutely. And
so I think we're wrapping up here. Is there anything else you'd like to share? Social media, where the people can find you around the interwebs?
Upcoming projects, sure. All that good stuff.
Absolutely. So you can find me at jenhemphill.com. And as you already mentioned, I have a podcast that's called Her Money Matters. And I do also have an upcoming book that's called Her Money Matters, The Missing Truths from Traditional Money Advice. And basically the whole purpose of that book is to cover what traditional money advice is missing, hence the title. So I talk about mindset. I talk about, of course, money wins, like I mentioned earlier. I talk about some of those things that I referred to in our talk today, because I think that's important because there's a lot of people like myself that I found myself stuck even after I followed that traditional money advice.
And when does it come out, or can people pre-subscribe?
Yes. So you can go to jenhemphill.com/book and you can get on the early notification list.
All right. And thank you for joining us, Jen. I think this was a great conversation and set people up for a great 2018.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
We've also partnered with NerdWallet for your personal finance needs. And you can find their free calculators at paychecksandbalances.com/tools. If you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share it with your network and hit us with those 5 stars and Apple Podcasts. If you're not sure how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. What'd you learn from the episode, brother?
Man, I was just thinking about all of the fundamental things, you know, establishing a budget, making it easy, making it manageable, even the idea, and we've talked about this on the show before, but this idea of like starting simple. So I think she said start with, you know, $1,000, if that makes sense for you, versus being like, I got to have 6 months of savings in the bank, which is super daunting. And oftentimes when things are super daunting, people fall off super quickly. So I'm glad she just said start simple and start small, you know, and then that's a big thing, especially around this time of year, is just better to get going rather than give yourself some huge goal that intimidates you and you never get started in the first place.
Yeah, and I think which came out as a theme in the show, but also to be better than average. And I saw a tweet, which I'm probably going to butcher because I'm going to try it, recover it from my non-existent memory. But it said something to the effect of the average person is 17 pounds overweight, only reads 4 books a year, is $30,000 in, that's actually going to be school loan debt, and $16,000 in credit card debt. Why would you want to strive for average? So use 2018, put a plan together, be better than average.
Yes. And so we want to thank everyone for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed, be sure to share with a friend. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.